BOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, I report on efforts by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to improve economic mobility in the U.S. Jill Robbins tells us about some of the year's most mispronounced names. Brian Lynn has the latest on Google's legal case. A jury has found the company's app store operates as a monopoly. Later, Jill and Andrew Smith present the lesson of the day. But first, in recent years, city leaders in Grand Island, Nebraska, observed that many workers and students were walking or riding long distances to their jobs or schools. So when city administrator Laura McAloon learned of a chance to study the development of a bus system to meet those transportation needs, she took it. The study received support from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, along with the International City County Management Association. It sent McAloon to Washington, D.C., along with other local leaders, to learn about policies to lift people in their community out of poverty. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced last week that it will donate $100 million to expand its work on reducing poverty in the U.S. The commitment is part of the $460 million the foundation said in 2022 it would donate over 4 years to this area of need. The foundation says it is looking to quicken the speed at which its gifts have an impact. Ryan Ripple is a founding director for economic strategy at the Gates Foundation. He said the large donations represent an important change in its strategy and give grantees more power in directing their own work. The investment is a small part of the foundation's overall budget, which was $7 billion last year. But it has quickly grown. The expansion of their work, Ripple said, depends on whether they meet their goal of improving economic mobility for 50 million people in the U.S. who are just above the poverty level with a yearly income of $29,160. The foundation will give money to organizations working to expand support for local governments using evidence-based policies that improve economic mobility. That includes policies that connect people with skills without college degrees to jobs, helping people receive government benefits, and pushing businesses to change working conditions to improve work-life balance. At a meeting in Washington, D.C. in May, the Urban Institute introduced the tools and research they have developed to help cities and counties understand barriers to economic mobility. There, McAloon from Grand Island realized that her city of 53,000 needed to collect more information. By the end of the meeting, they had changed their objectives and launched a data collective and analysis project that included surveying local citizens and working with the human resources departments of major local employers. What the city learned is that transportation had been a problem for workers. But when the meatpacking plants and other manufacturers raised wages after the pandemic, many households were able to pay for cars. Now the problem, the employers said, was housing. At the close of Grand Island's research study this fall, McAloon said they found it would not be possible to set up a bus system under federal rules. Instead, they are exploring a transportation pool that is partially paid for by employers and the state. The study led to new communication and cooperation across agencies, schools, and local organizations. And McAloon's office learned that a lack of plumbers and electricians was holding up new housing developments. So she reached out to the community college, which is now setting up a technical training program in high schools.
Reporters, politicians, and public figures have had trouble saying some of the words that relate to the top stories of the year. Last week, the online language learning company Babbel released its lists of the most mispronounced words in the United States and Britain. The two lists are a reminder of the year's news on everything from scientific discoveries to politics. Babbel teacher Malcolm Massey noted the diversity of the words. This year's words come from several different languages. I think a lot of it is due to how close our cultures have become because of how globalized things are, Massey said. A popular singer who spells her name S-Z-A is on the U.S. list. Babbel notes her name is pronounced SZA. The first name of another entertainer is also on the list. Cillian Murphy is an Irish actor who starred in this summer's hit as physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer. His first name is pronounced Cillian. Other pronunciations on the U.S. list include the name of biotech businessman Vivek Ramaswamy, who is a Republican presidential candidate. The correct way to say his name is Vivek Ramaswamy. Two volcanoes were also on the list, Mexico's Popocatépetl and Hawaii's Kilauea. The winning word at this year's Scripps National Spelling Bee also made the U.S. list. That word was samophile. It means any animal or plant that prefers sandy soils or areas. The coronation of King Charles in May helped put the Stone of Scone on Britain's list. The holy stone rests beneath the coronation chair, where a new king first receives his crown. Christy Denlinger teaches linguistics at the University of Texas at Austin. She said hearing an unfamiliar word often enough can help someone master it. Anything that is kind of different from what a speaker is used to, they can learn how to pronounce things in different ways than what they're used to. It just takes more exposure, Denlinger said. Massey said that as one learns a new pronunciation, it is important to not stress perfection, but progress over time. So practicing these words again and again. In some cases, the correct pronunciation is just a matter of personal choice. Earning a place on the U.S. list was the last name of Travis Kelce, the Kansas City Chiefs American football player. Whether Kelce should be pronounced with one or two syllables, Kels or Kelce, has been a subject even his own family talks about. Both Travis and his brother, Philadelphia Eagles center Jason Kelce, say their last name as Kelce. On a podcast, they discussed with their father, Ed Kelce, how that pronunciation came to be. "I got tired of correcting people," said Ed Kelsey, who said that his co-workers always called him Kelsey. Jason Kelsey then asks, "Should we go by Kells or Kelsey?" His father answers, "Do whatever you want." I did. I'm Jill Robbins.
An American jury has found that Google's App Store operates as an illegal monopoly. The decision came in a lawsuit brought by video game company Epic Games. The jury reached the decision this week in California after a four-week trial. Epic had argued Google uses business methods that block competition against its Google Play Store. That is where users can download apps for smartphones and other devices using the Android operating system, OS. Google owns the Android OS. Epic uses Google Play and other app stores to sell its popular game Fortnite and others. Experts predict that if the ruling stands, it could cost Google billions of dollars in business. It could also change the way all app stores do business in the future. Google condemned the court's decision and said it will appeal the ruling. Android holds by far the largest share of the mobile OS market worldwide. Online data researcher Statista estimated in October that Android had a market share of 70.5%. The next closest competitor, Apple, held a market share of 28.8%. Other companies, such as Apple, also operate app stores. Epic brought a similar lawsuit against Apple in 2021. In it, Epic argued Apple used methods in its app store that created a monopoly that blocked competition. A federal judge ruled mostly in Apple's favor in that case. Epic has appealed that ruling. One of the biggest issues in both cases was whether Google and Apple have the right to require developers to use the App Store's payment systems. Such systems can take up to 30% of a sale in commissions from app developers. In the case of Epic versus Apple, the judge mostly sided with Apple. But the judge did find that Apple had used some unfair business methods which violated California law. The judge ordered Apple to permit developers across the United States to add their own links to process payments within iPhone apps. Reuters news agency reported that Google's appeal will take place in the same court in San Francisco that decided Epic's case against Apple. Epic's appeal of the Apple decision is currently before the U.S. Supreme Court. The jury in the Epic versus Google legal case debated for about 3 hours before giving its decision on Monday. It decided that Google's control of its Play Store amounted to an illegal monopoly. The monopoly covered both Google's app selling system and its payment processing method within the app, the jury found. Epic did not ask the court for financial damages. Epic Chief Tim Sweeney praised the court's decision on X, formerly known as Twitter. "Victory over Google," Sweeney wrote. In a company statement, Epic called the verdict a win for all app developers and consumers around the world. Google's Vice President of Government Affairs and Public Policy, William White, confirmed the company's plan to appeal the ruling. In a statement, he said, "We will continue to defend the Android business model and remain deeply committed to our users, partners, and the broader Android ecosystem." White added his opinion that the Google Play Store currently offers more choice and openness than any other major mobile provider. Depending on how the court's ruling is enforced, Google could lose billions of dollars yearly in commissions on sales through the Play Store. But the company's main source of earnings, online advertising, would not be directly affected by the court's decision. The case now goes back to the judge in the trial, U.S. District Judge James Donato. He will hear arguments on both sides about how Google should change its business operations to improve fair competition. The judge has suggested this process could begin in the second week of January. During those hearings, Google will be able to argue against the changes proposed by Epic. In addition, any orders established by the judge at the end could be appealed. These processes, technology experts say, could result in the case extending for many months or possibly years. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn is here now to talk more about his technology report. Thanks for joining me, Brian.
Of course, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Your report today was about a jury's ruling this week that Google's Play Store operates as an illegal monopoly. Many people are questioning this decision because a judge in 2021 ruled mostly in favor of Apple in a similar case brought by Epic Games. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is a question coming up a lot since the latest court decision. And so far, there are not a lot of clear answers for why this particular jury ruled as it did. In the Apple case, a judge ruled, not a jury. And some experts say in general, American judges have been more favorable to large technology companies than juries are likely to be.
And do you think the Google decision is likely to affect the case against Apple, which is currently on appeal before the U.S. Supreme Court?
Some legal experts have suggested this possibility. As you mentioned, that case is currently on appeal, so lawyers for Epic could very well bring up the Google case to support their own arguments in that case. So lawyers for Epic could very well bring up the Google case to support their own arguments. And that could make it more difficult for Apple to defend itself against accusations of unfair business practices, and yes, could even result in that ruling being overturned.
Okay, thanks for joining me, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Dan.
Is Anna Mateo.
My name is Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
You're listening to The Lesson of the Day on the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our video series, Let's Learn English. This series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
As the series progresses, the English you hear gradually becomes more advanced. You will hear Anna and the other people in the video begin to speak a little faster, use more variety of verb tenses, and use more idiomatic expressions.
So today, we're going to look at the language in Lesson 47 of the series. You will hear the way English speakers pronounce some words when they speak more quickly, and we will explain some idiomatic expressions as well.
Lesson 47 is called How Can I Help? Anna sees that her friend Pete needs help fixing his car.
Hi, Pete. What are you doing?
Oh, hi, Anna. Right now, I am fixing my car.
How's it going?
It's going not so good.
How can I help? I was planning to visit some friends, but if you need help, I can help. I like helping.
Anna, I can fix it myself. But thanks.
If you listen to Anna carefully, you can hear some examples of her pronouncing words quickly. And as we have explained in other lessons of the day, when people speak faster, words connect together quickly, and some vowel sounds get changed or reduced. Listen to this sentence again.
How can I help? I was planning to visit some friends, but if you need help, I can help. I like helping.
The two small words, can I, sound like one word with two syllables, can I. And instead of saying to visit, the vowel in the word to gets changed to a schwa, which sounds like a. So the word sounds like this, to visit.
And with the two words, but if, we don't really pronounce the letter T in the word but. Instead, it sounds almost like the letter D and connects to the word if, like this. But if. But if. But if. Now listen to Anna again and see if you can hear these examples we just explained.
How can I help? I was planning to visit some friends, but if you need help, I can help. I like helping.
Now let's listen to more of Lesson 47. See if you can hear when Anna uses a contraction of the modal will. For example, instead of saying I will, she says I'll.
Pete, I think I found your problem. These are spark plugs. They start the engine.
I know that, Anna, but there were too many spark plugs in there, so I took out the extra ones.
There are no extras, Pete. You need all of them. Pete, can you fix a car yourself?
Well, Anna, last night I was watching the online video course, You Can Fix a Car Yourself.
Yes, you can fix your car yourself.
And I watched the first 10 lessons, so I think I know what I'm doing.
How many lessons are there?
450.
450? That'll take too long. If I fix your car, I'll have it running in 10 to 15 minutes. Where are your tools?
I have this. And this.
Great. I'll get my tools. I'll be back. In a flash.
Back in a flash is an idiomatic expression. It means that a person will return very quickly. And let's listen again to the contractions Anna uses with the modal will.
450? That'll take too long. If I fix your car, I'll have it running in 10 to 15 minutes. Where are your tools?
Instead of saying that will, English speakers usually just connect these words together quickly with a contraction like this.
That'll take too long.
As we explained in another lesson of the day, we can contract or connect the modal will with any subject pronoun like I, we, they, or it. So instead of saying it will, we just say it'll, just like we contract that will to that'll.
And that reminds me of an American popular song from the 1950s. It uses the contraction that'll in its title and lyrics.
Does it go like this? Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die.
Yes, it does go like that. And the name of the song is That'll Be the Day. Good job, Andrew.
Thank you. Remember, that'll just means that will.
Now, we'll listen to the end of Lesson 47 of Let's Learn English and see if we can find out what the problem is with Pete's car.
It's not starting! It's not starting!
What's wrong?
This car is stupid! Stupid! Stupid!
Pete, kicking the tires will not help.
Well, you did not help, Anna. You did not help!
Pete, pull yourself together, man! Give me the keys. I must feel the key in the ignition and turn it myself.
Use the key, Anna. Turn the key, Anna. What are you forgetting, Anna?
Pete!
What?
You are out of gas.
I can't be out of gas. I'm out of gas. Sorry, Anna. I'll go get some.
Pete, you relax. Clean your face. You can watch the rest of your online video course. It'll be faster if I go. In a flash. Till next time!
If you watch carefully here, you will see the master is someone you might know.
Anna says goodbye and leaves in a flash. And did you hear the contraction with the word it?
It'll be faster if I go.
And before we go, here's one more idiomatic expression from Lesson 47. Listen again to Anna.
Pete! Pull yourself together, man! Give me the keys.
When we say pull yourself together, we mean that a person needs to have better control of his or her emotions.
Listeners, it'll also be helpful if you notice one more detail about pronunciation. When we contract the two words I will, it can sound like I'll. But when we speak really fast, it can change to something more like this, I'll. The pronunciation practice video in Lesson 47 explains this. Let's listen.
When Americans reduce the words I and will to make I'll, the short form sometimes sounds like all. Listen to Anna and Pete.
450? That'll take too long. If I fix your car, I'll have it running in 10 to 15 minutes. I'll get my tools. I'll be back in a flash.
I'm out of gas. Sorry, Anna. I'll go get some.
And that's also true of some dialects of American English. We'll be visiting Anna again soon in another lesson of the day. And it'll be great if you can join us.
And it'll be great if you can share the lesson of the day with your friends and family. Remember that you can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.